every single person who walks into that arena, every single one of those chefs could beat every other one of those chefs on a given day with a given randomizer. It truly is a kind of knockout, one-off competition between two chefs. And I don't think food television has ever seen anything like it before. Hi, this is Simon the Junker, and you are on the road with Dane on WGN.
720 WGN, high atop Chicago in the Skyline studio, and on the line, excited to have a guy that fans know well as a esteemed judge on Iron Chef Cutthroat Kitchen as part of the team coverage for Tournament of Champions on Food Network. He's the host of the Eat My Globe podcast, author of the best-selling book, Fed White and Blue, Finding America with My Fork. He is always exploring the world and its flavors, the one and only Simon Majumdar. Welcome to WGN.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, it's great to have you. It's always great to have you on. You know, we get to see you on, and of course, we interact a little bit on social media, and it's always exciting to have an opportunity to talk with you. I always think of you as one of, you know, not a, I don't say a very few, but an elite, truly thinking man's food personality, thinking man's food celebrity, kind of taking us to places we can't go or aren't, and thinking of ways in things that we can't or don't. Like the pandemic, though, has kind of stifled a lot of the situations that you would do. So we wanted to know, and the listeners are curious too, is have you seen, and you and your wife travel a lot, the pandemic is kind of an oasis of creative opportunity or just stifling confinement? How has it been?
Well, I mean, I know that, like for a lot of people, it's been a challenge in some aspects because obviously we haven't been able to get out on the road. We had plans to go to some amazing places around the world. There's still lots of countries we need to kind of visit that have been very high on our list. We wanted to go to the, you know, the Stans, as it was, Kazakhstan and places like that. We had plans to go to Romania and Bulgaria. We had plans to go to Bhutan in South Asia. So we had lots of exciting plans, all of which obviously we've had to put on the back burner. But, you know, compared to a lot of people who, you know, have obviously been struggling, whether it's with their work or with dealing with issues with their family, with the illnesses, you know, we've been very fortunate. We've been able to stay, you know, in Los Angeles, which was kind of warm, and at least we were comfortable in our apartment. And the other side of it for me, from a creative point of view, was I was able to concentrate on writing the new season of Eat My Globe, which, as you said, is a food history podcast. And normally when I do that, it's kind of grabbing moments when I can sit down and write, because it's almost the equivalent of writing a book each season. But this season, I was able to sit down and kind of really turn my attention to it as one big project during the pandemic. So actually, we've done two seasons. We've just recorded season six. So, that, you know, there were not good elements, because, you know, pandemics can never be good for anyone, but right, at least elements we were able to turn to our advantage.
On the interview side, because, you know, because of what you do and because of the shows and the content you create, and typically you're the subject of an interview just like you are right now. But for the purpose of the podcast, because I think part of what makes you so, you know, successful and appealing is you're curious, right? You're always curious about all these things, whether it's the flavors or the history and some of that stuff. And so through the podcast, you get to be the interviewer. Is that something that for you comes naturally? Is that something that, I know you're excited about it, so there's an authenticity in the questions. Is that something that you see as a product of something you have to do in order to get Marcus Samuelson to explain all the things you want to know, or some of the other subjects? Or is it something you like doing, being the interviewer?
No, I actually love being the interviewer, because for me, you know, like you said, and you have obviously that same kind of sense of it, is I think I'm intellectually curious. And if I'm in the situation of being with someone who is really, really good at what they do and really knowledgeable, but either about a subject or about a technique, then I'm just feel kind of blessed that I'm able to have this opportunity to talk to them. And so I get quite, I'm a fanboy myself. So we actually went to interview Ken Burns in Walpole, New Hampshire, a year or so ago now, because he owns a restaurant in New Hampshire. And I love Ken Burns. I think he's one of the greatest, you know, documentary filmmakers of any time, but certainly of my lifetime. And so we just went and flew in and sat with him for 2 hours. And I was completely, you know, jaw to the floor that I was sitting at the same table as Ken Burns. So I think if you don't have that ability, then I don't think you should be interviewing. You have to be there. You have to be having a genuine conversation. And I think part of it is if you know the subject a bit, so you can at least prompt them with really great questions. And I think that's, to be honest, those are the people I'm attracted to anyway, people who are always constantly learning. And I find this when I'm doing shows. You know, if I'm lucky enough to be on a show with Guy Fieri or with Alton Brown or, you know, Bobby Flay or all these amazing people who are really, really good at what they do, not just cooking, but on television, I just stand and watch them because I learn more in that kind of osmotic way of just watching someone perform at that very high level that I take things away from it every time I'm on TV with them. So it's a great opportunity for me. So I love doing the interview. I want to do more of it, to be honest.
Now, is there something, so, I mean, I've been covering the food side of things for, you know, over 15 years and, you know, every single kind of food personality and celebrity in place and all of that stuff. It's fascinating to me. And it's obviously a great passion for what it is that we do. But I'll also do interviews with, you know, with Barack Obama or Don Ho or based in the radio world. Sometimes, you know, I'll be hosting just regular shows and not necessarily locked into the food side of things. Do you have a secret unknown interest that you're fascinated, curious about that has nothing to do with food, which is maybe your conversation starter in so many other ways that you're hoping to do or kind of looking to have conversations about?
Well, I think a lot of it is driven by the people. So my absolute passion overall is history.
Yeah.
Because I think history informs so much of, you know, obviously who we are and how we became who we are, but also our future in so many ways. Not that I necessarily believe that we could repeat history if we ignore it. I don't necessarily believe that, but I do believe that it tells us a lot about who we are. You know, this isn't the first time we've been through a pandemic, and it's really fascinating how similar the reactions of human beings have been to pandemics to how they were in the time of the Black Plague and how they were in the time of 1918 and how they were in the time of the Justinian pandemic in Roman times. It's really fascinating that some of the reactions of what people said are almost identical. And I just find that fascinating. And also because, you know, I'm fascinated by the fact that if you go back to ancient times and we think of it as so far away, that the way that people talk to each other in letters, I've just been reading some letters of a Chinese soldier in the time of the Terracotta Warriors back to his kind of aunt. And he's writing asking her to send cash because he spent it all in the kind of commissary in the barracks. And it's made me laugh because it's just exactly the same as a letter that would have been written now by a young soldier in the US military. And so that's my passion. So when I find things that are just historically accurate, but historically kind of informative, but actually really give us a light onto who we are now, those are the things that I find. And they don't have to be food. I focus on it because of what I do. And I really find food history fascinating. I mean, absolutely fascinating, the people that you meet. But if you look at all my podcasts, then 90% of them are history.
Well, it's true, though, too, Simon. And food is sort of that one of those great connectors, whether it's music or art. Food is one of the things that ties, you know, everyone together and that everyone can relate to, despite, you know, whatever differences we may have, you know, culturally or politically. Like food is that olive branch in a bunch of different ways. And so the way that it ties together is really cool. So, well, now, did you see too, Simon, that this may have been an opportunity as we all sort of look for different silver linings against that backdrop of so much negativity, is that there were maybe things that you could focus on and write about for the podcast that may have been pushed to, no pun intended, the back burner, you know, some of the history stuff or some focus on maybe some of the personalities that you featured or highlighted where you had time. Right?
Well, absolutely. With some of the interviews we've got coming up in season 6, for example, one fantastic interview we just did with Chef Marcus Samuelson, who I'm sure everybody knows who watches Chopped, who's just written a terrific book called The Rise on the history of Black and soul cooking in the United States. I was able to kind of catch him because he wasn't moving us around so much. So often we're all moving around in so many different circles with some of the people I want to interview, trying to find a spot where you can connect with someone is often quite difficult. But in this occasion, you know, we just both happened to be at home because of what's going on. So yeah, I think it did give us some opportunities. But the honest answer is, if you tell me as soon as I can and it's safe for everybody, you know, that we wouldn't want to go straight out on the road again, I'd be lying.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's got sort of that bucket list, and your bucket list is a little more exotic and interesting than most. I know my kids are saying, you know, when can we get back to Disney World, right? And see, of course, they do have Epcot, right? Which is you get to travel the globe in sort of a superficial, maybe not completely realistic way. And so for you guys, before we get into some of the excitement of Tournament of Champions, people do get inspired by the places that you go, and you've mentioned some sort of off the beaten path locations. Like, where are you guys? Is it going to be just the stuff that, you know, we had to put off, we're going to get right to it? Or have there been other things that you've become aware of that may move up the list?
Well, I think one of the first things we're going to do is it's kind of gingerly putting your feet outside, you know, the apartment once you can start traveling. And one of the things is that, you know, my wife and I've been fortunate enough to visit every state in this amazing country of ours. But my wife still has a few states to visit. So I think what we're going to do initially is do some domestic travel, go to some of the areas kind of in the middle, as it were. My wife has never been to the Dakotas, places like that, Nebraska. So go and see some of these places that often don't get mentioned as much, but have a lot to offer, have great people, have increasingly terrific food there, and just go and connect with our, you know, our own country, as it were, before. And then once we can travel abroad more safely and more welcomed abroad, because obviously people have been a little wary, then we'll go out to some of those far-flung places. And I think places like Bhutan, which is this extraordinary country that has very limited access and you have to get a special visa, but is really, really extraordinary by all accounts, is going to be very high on our list.
Oh, it's great that you're kind of, you know, welcoming in open arms into that team photo of great places to visit in America, Nebraska, and the Dakotas. And we at WGN, we reach 38 states in Canada, so we're all the way out there. But I might suggest, just based on time, is maybe, you know, with Nebraska, just do a Zoom call with the Visitor and Tourism Bureau. You don't have to actually go there. I'm only kidding. You want to get there and, of course, experience it and see the people. One of the ways that people are enjoying Simon Majumdar these days is through Tournament of Champions. People love your TV stuff, and you always get so much great feedback. Well-deserved, right? Cutthroat Kitchen, and, of course, you're on Iron Chef. I mean, you're sort of the understated, entertaining element that is there, right? So, but this is something totally different. Talking with Chef Aaron May, and our mutual friends with Guy, and we've known a lot of the stuff that he's done over many years, and this is a very interesting thing. So I'd love to get your perspective as a guy who's been part of both of those things. It brings sort of the talent level and sort of the gravity of Iron Chef, but you build in the drama of live sports. You've got the brackets, you've got the coverage, the pregame show, the postgame show, a lot of fun. I mean, it's really something special, Simon.
I will say this, and I'm not just saying it because it's on. I think this is easily one of the most special shows that I've ever been kind enough to be involved with. You know, people have been kind enough to invite me to be involved with. You know, when Guy asked me if I would come on and be this kind of color commentator, I had to kind of think what that was, because I'm not as up on American sport, and we don't have as much of that in European sport, maybe a little bit with soccer. But what he wanted to tap into, I think, was the knowledge that I have and Justin has with the food, because the key, I think, of this show that makes it so special, and I loved Iron Chef, and that was one of the first shows, the first show I ever did, and I still adored doing it. But I think what this is the blind tasting, so nobody knows who the judges are. The judges don't know who they're going to be tasting, so they're just looking at what's on the plate. And so what that means in terms of our position, myself and Justin, is we have to be really on the ball describing the dishes to the judges, so that we're representing the chefs very, very seriously. And so obviously we're trying to get that information from them as they're cooking, and in a brief few seconds at the end, you know, before the food is taken away and held safely or getting ready to be presented to the judges. And, you know, obviously you can see a little bit of that on telly, but it can be quite stressful for the chefs and for us they want to tell us what they've prepared and all the elements and all the things from the dreaded randomizer. And so it can be quite stressful, but it is, I will say, the kind of sense of achievement of being involved with a show that's I'm so thrilled about. Yeah. And, you know, came from Guy's head, as it were, is something that I'm really, really kind of thrilled to be part of.
I got to tell you, and this is crazy, but I'll admit it for the listeners one more time, is that there was a couple times in there where I got chills, you know, and we watch a lot of TV, we cover a lot of the food stuff. And so there are things about it that are built in where you're taking that drama and really sharing it. And you guys on the coverage side, it's every bit of that sports situation where you're trying to get that comment from the quarterback as he's, you know, going in for a timeout. And so what were you thinking here? And so you've got to be able to do that. You've got to have the knowledge to not only to get some of that information, that feedback from the participants, the chefs, but also to kind of convey it. I don't want to say dumb it down, but kind of just translate it into ways that the viewers can appreciate too. Is that one of the things that you think, okay, well, this is exciting because you're seeing a lot of innovation here. You're seeing a lot of just, you know, sort of outside the box thinking because you have to, whether it's the time or the randomizer, you've got to sort of translate what's going on.
Well, I think there's two elements of it. One is the very kind of an often quite cerebral way of having to explain to the judges how every element on the randomizer came into the dish. And obviously you don't see all of that on television because it by necessity needs to be edited. But we will present everything in a way that they will understand. So they don't think, well, what did they do with this piece of equipment or what did they do with this ingredient? The other thing is then to realize that, you know, although Justin and I come from this very food-centric world, people at home are watching to be entertained as well. And I think sometimes they may not know the piece of equipment, you know, they may not know at home, they won't have some of these things at home because they might be from a more professional kitchen rather than something you have at home. And so I try and explain in a very accessible but definitely not talking down or trying to condescend, trying to say to people, well, this is what it is. And perfect example is a couple of weeks ago, and I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but this was a couple of weeks ago, they had a piece of equipment that was basically the equivalent of like a strainer. And I said, well, basically, it's a posh strainer. And they gave it the French name on the randomizer. And it's all. And I just said, well, this is what it is. And a lot of people came on Twitter. I was live tweeting. If people like to listen, like to read along on Sunday, I live tweet without giving any spoilers. And they said, oh, thank you. I was wondering what it was. So what I'm trying to do is entertain the people at home, explain some of the things that are going on, explain why they're using an acid here, why they're using sweetness here, why they're using a particular type of pepper, why they're using a technique, and try and explain that at home to why that might be an advantage for them in the competition. The truth is as well, is that all of the chefs there are people I know in the business. Yeah. You know, some of them I know very well, some a little less, but I still know them. And so we don't have any sides in this. Both Justin and I take it very seriously, and we might have a little kind of dig at each other if one wins more than another on a day. But what we really want is for all of the chefs to be represented at the very best that they can to the judges. And that's our job.
On the sports side of it, and you mentioned the familiarity because there are a lot of familiar faces, not only to you, to me, to people, but also to the people that are there too. A lot of these, you know, it is, you know, sometimes Iron Chef, they'll pull a chef out from, you know, some great restaurant in the middle of nowhere and they'll be going up against Michael Simon. And Michael Simon may not have that much of a recon on who that is, but these are all recognizable names. Do you guys ever, from a coverage standpoint, you and Justin, of course, Justin Warner, we know him very well. I consider him, you know, one of those cerebral food guys, totally different than you, Simon, but still one of those thinking people on the food side. Do you guys ever get together and say like, well, this is this person's strength, we're going to have to highlight this, or kind of just sort of like handicapping what might be the most entertaining things or interesting things or things you may run into because in the heat of the actual episode, you may not have time to think on the fly?
I don't think you can really on this. And one of the joys of this game is, you know, once the randomizer comes in, all bets are off, you know, and it's a great equalizer. And I think our job then, and to be honest, it flows so fast and the cooking is really, you know, on point in terms of the timing. And so, I mean, I think if we had a more relaxed environment, you might be able to think about it like this. All we do is we look at the techniques because we know them as cooks. We look at the personalities and we might know, obviously, you know, if I'm looking at, you mentioned Chef Aaron May, you know, the way that he cooks is incredibly elegant, but also full of robust flavors and unapologetic in how he delivers them. And, you know, he's just a magnificent cook. But so I will have that in my background just because I know them. Or, if you see some of the, again, I don't want to talk too much about the names just because I don't want to give spoilers to anyone who hasn't watched it yet. But you know, if you look at some of the names, you're going to know there are certain ways that they're known for cooking. But what I also love about this is that, and I think Guy's been very strong about this, is bringing in names that might be a little less familiar to people and seeing what they can do. And we saw this in Tournament of Champions Season 1, some big upsets. And I think that's what's strong about it as well, because what you find is kind of your past records don't stand for much once you go into the randomizer, because all of these people, and I would say this in Season 1 and definitely say in Season 2, every single person who walks into that arena, and it really does feel like an arena. I've said, I think once, it's like gladiatorial combat.
Right.
Once they walk in, every single one of those chefs could beat every other one of those chefs on a given day with a given randomizer. And so that's what makes it so very special. It truly is a kind of knockout, one-off competition between two chefs. And I don't think food television has ever seen anything like it before.
Well, they always talk, you know, Iron Chef, of course, it's Kitchen Stadium. This is sort of a culinary coliseum that you guys are in. And I can't wait till future seasons where you can have a full crowd there and have people getting into it. Now, here's the thing, and this is where it's sort of a fine line. And you have been a part of so many of these different, not only for this show, but other similar incarnations, is that Guy's fun. You know, he's a fun guy, but Maron may describe him as an evil genius. I would like to say, you know, as a person who knows him, that he's a benevolent dictator, perhaps. And is there behind the scenes, is there fun? Because it seems like, you know, the stakes are very high. The stress level seems very high. So is the fun sort of there as a distraction, or is it really kind of fun behind the scenes for all the things that you guys are doing?
Well, I think we, first of all, just to touch on, Guy is seriously one of the smartest people in the food business that I have ever encountered. And, you know, I've got to know him over the last few years with doing Guy's Grocery Games. And yes, he is fun. And yes, he has that kind of mischievous element in him. But his respect for the chefs is absolute. And just the smartness with which he looks at how television is created and how he knows about the food. Yeah. There's very little that I can tell Guy about how someone's cooking that he doesn't already know. So from that point of view, I think, you know, this show is very much in his image, and I think is showing, you know, people just the side of him that they may not have seen before. In terms of fun, yes. I mean, here's the thing. Being on a show that's hugely popular is always going to be fun. And I know a lot of people, I'm very fortunate to be doing what I'm doing, and a lot of people would like to swap places with me. So I absolutely, you know, love doing it, and I hope they keep on asking me to do it. I think, I'll be honest, when I do it, I'm much more serious, not to the point where, but I'm there to do a job. And I'm really, because the thing is, if I'm having like too much fun, and by doing that, I forget to mention X that a chef has done to the judges, that's down to me. They may have done their job in the cooking, but I won't have done my job in the presenting. So I have to say I'm super focused, and I know Justin is exactly the same. So that doesn't mean that we're not enjoying it, because I absolutely love being part of it, but we have a job to do. And maybe afterwards when we do the after show and we can talk a little bit about it, then we can kind of breathe out a bit and share some of our feelings. But when we're there on the set, and in the stadium, we have one job to do, and that's it.
I was wondering, you know, and there's been some feedback from listeners, too, where they're like, well, you know, because of the people there, Justin is fun. You are secretly fun, right? And you're subtle and fun. And then Guy, like, that's part of his DNA. So you know that there's fun people there, but there is so much drama. There's so much at stake. As you wonder if anybody really gets to take that deep breath and kind of just relax and do that. Well, we're excited. You know, it's one of those things. And to have an all-star cast, not only on the chef side and the competition, be able to capture that in a way that I think does it justice, right? And on the television side, as you mentioned, Simon, to having that entertainment IQ to build in things that make it you know, because cooking isn't always a spectator sport. And to do that, I think, takes a special talent. And to have you guys on the coverage side is really cool. I think that's a luxury for us viewers. It is Sunday nights on Food Network, Tournament of Champions 2. And he is there along with that cast, of course, Guy Fieri and Justin Warner, breaking down the action and, of course, giving it that insight on the culinary side as well. And so, Simon, before we let you go, let's give out information for Eat My Globe. I know you're creating so many different things on the seasons. You mentioned writing the episodes and people can enjoy those. Where can they go and find out more and download and hear those, and also social media wise to keep up with your adventures?
Oh, well, that's really fun. Thank you. So if you want to listen to me or hear me on kind of Eat My Globe, so you'll find Eat My Globe podcast about things you didn't know about food. And that's, I talk about food history. I talk about everything from the last meal served on the Titanic to the history of gin, to the history of, in the new season, we've got histories of military rations, the history of olive oil, all kinds of fun things that we talk about, and lots of interviews with some amazing people. And so that new season launches at the end of April. So you'll find it wherever you find your podcasts. If you go and onto any of the social media, you know, I am at Simon Majumda, and it's me. So I always say that when people come and ask me a question, it's always me. It's not like someone doing it for me. So I love to chat to people. And then most recently, you'll find me on Facebook, Instagram, you know, Twitter. And then most recently, you were talking about trying to have some fun. I decided to go on TikTok, which I'm probably about 20 years too old to do.
No, Simon, do you need a tutorial? Because my daughter does a lot of those little dances, and maybe she could send us instructional video. Maybe.
Nobody needs to see me dance, so I promise you there's none of that. But what I am doing, just because my wife and I said, well, let's just do this one for fun, because, you know, it's usually, I think it's more... as you said, it younger people doing it. So what I'm doing at the moment is I'm reading out lyrics of famous American songs, rap songs, in a very British accent. So if you go in...
Oh, that's great.
So if you go in yesterday, I was reading Raspberry Beret by Prince in a very British accent. Oh. And I'm getting loads of requests from people to read that song. So go and have a look. And on that, I'm at the real Simon Majumda. Apparently, there was another Simon Majumda on there.
What? That's not possible, is it? Okay. All right. Well, we'll make that.
I don't
think
there's another Simon Majumda out there. I think they were trying to maybe tell people they might be me, but I'm not sure.
Well, we will be sure to have links up at WGNradio.com, and we'll make sure to make that distinction so that you can enjoy Simon in all the different ways that he is out there and creating entertainment and content and all of that inside, one of the very, very best in the business. Simon, we'll let you get back to it. But thanks so much for jumping on the show today.
It's always a very great pleasure, and best wishes to everyone listening.